Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb on a Wednesday midweek version. But let's be honest, it doesn't matter what day of the week it is. Good, the bad, and the dumb is the good, the bad, and the dumb. What's the good of the day?
The good of the day, Tony, is that in an era where it seems teams will jettison for whatever reason possible.
Yes.
The Orioles have agreed to stay at Camden Yards for the next 30 years.
Oh, okay.
So there was, you know, the lease was up for the Orioles, or the lease is coming due for the Orioles. And so there were questions surrounding whether or not the Orioles will stay, because everyone wants a new stadium.
Everybody does, yeah.
So they agreed to a deal. Now, the deal itself is for 15 years. But if the Orioles, Camden Yards, and the state can get a development plan, just a plan, by 2027, that'll kick in an extra 15 years on that lease.
Oh, okay.
So the lease in totality will be for 30 years.
Yeah, okay. So, Camden Yards, when it came in the early 90s, was a revolutionary ballpark, right? It was
Which got me thinking, is it one of the cathedrals right now?
Yeah, well, for certain generations.
Just in baseball. Yeah, just in baseball.
I mean, it came at a time where teams were trying to get out of those cookie cutter ashtrays of these dual stadiums that were dominating in the 70s and the 80s, right? Cincinnati, St. Louis, I mean, Pittsburgh, all of these places
Oakland,
all these places that had these dual stadiums. And that was like the trend all the way. Like, you know, it's funny when you take young people and you show them video of like, the Dolphins playing in or the Raiders playing in a place that had baseball dirt, right? And you're like, wow, that's crazy. But they were trying to create these cozy ballparks, and Camden Yards was kind of the one that kind of started this, where they went, hey, we found an area, we built this cozy ballpark, it's really nice, the aesthetics are beautiful, it's not a dual-purpose stadium. And then the other team started going, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
That sounds great. Let's get that too. So now you started to see Jacobs Field in Cleveland and PNC Park, I guess, is that what it's called in Pittsburgh?
Yep.
Their stadium and all
Petco
these other
Park.
Places. Petco Park. All these baseball stadiums were popping up that, you know, said, hey, let's make a more cozy atmosphere instead of this boring sort of cathedral of dual sports. Let's make a ballpark.
Yeah, and just, you know, and make it a baseball stadium where, you know, it would be almost impossible to put a football field on there.
Yeah, it would be, if you put it in there, the eyesight.
Don't throw it to the corners.
Whatnot. Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. But, yeah, and I think it is. I think it's been around long enough that there's a generation that is, you know, could treat it like people have treated Fenway and Wrigley and Old Comiskey and places like that.
And though it hasn't really hosted many playoff games and definitely has not hosted a World Series yet, it does have one of the more iconic moments in baseball history.
Yeah.
You know, we can all remember, what was it, 21-32?
On the
wall across the street.
Yeah.
You know, that was, I mean, we can all picture it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and
yeah, I'm happy.
So.
I'm glad that there was a team able to work out a deal.
Yeah.
Because we don't usually get that anymore.
Everybody wants new. Everybody wants new stadiums. New. So good for them. All right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, Tony. I thought about going one direction and giving it to Ben Verlander.
Okay.
For saying that Shohei Ohtani is the most important signing in Dodgers history.
Oh, well, that's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah, because he's completely ignoring probably the most important signing in professional sports history, and that was of Jackie Robinson.
Right.
But ultimately, I had to give it to Steelers wide receiver George Pickens.
Boy, he just needed to be quiet on this. He did. He needed to not say things.
So
if
you don't know why we're giving it to George Pickens, picture this, if you will. It was first and goal or third and goal?
Yeah, I think it was third and goal.
Third and goal from about the 7-yard line, and I'm blanking on the running back's name.
Let's just say he missed a block.
Well, that's being very kind of you, Tony.
He not only missed a block, he didn't even attempt to make a block on Warren's attempt to get in the end zone.
And on Warren's attempt to get the end zone, the guy who did tackle him was the person that George Pickens needed to block. And the reason why George Pickens did not block him, and he quoted, he said he didn't want to get an injury.
Yeah. He said Tank Dell. Same thing. Like Tank Dell got hurt, even though it was two totally different angles on the block.
Two totally different plays.
Right. He was like, Tank Dell got hurt, so I could have gotten hurt, and I don't want to get hurt.
Yeah. In fact, if you watch the play all the way through and just watch him, he does kind of do like a little hop skip out of the way when the tackle started getting a little closer to him.
I don't blame George Pickens for this. I don't want to say I don't blame George Pickens for this. I mean, I do. That was terrible. That was a bad look, and it shows a lack of effort or a lack of willingness to make an effort to get the team to win games. But I do want to ask a larger question on this. Isn't this kind of what the NFL is reaping? Because it is told players for decades, you are disposable. There is no need to give you guaranteed contracts. We can just replace you whenever we want. We can cut you whenever we want. And so wouldn't it make a player say to themselves, why the heck would I risk an injury that could end my career when there's no security at the end of the career for a block that I know I'm going to get hurt or I could get hurt on?
True. But I think, I mean, if you...
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm not using that as a platform.
Yeah.
But I have been advocating for better contracts for players because they aren't protected as well as other sports.
Or other positions on their own team.
Well, true. But in terms of, look, if he suffers a season-ending, career-ending, never come back to the NFL injury,
right.
He's got nothing.
Yeah.
He's got nothing. And in baseball, you get everything that comes your way. In basketball, you get every dollar that comes your way. If you sign for $63 million, you're getting $63 million, even if you're not playing for them anymore. And the NFL has done a great job of not having that. And it's almost like saying, well, who's out here protecting me but me? Like, who's out here looking after me but me? Is Mike Tomlin going to write me a check for the rest of my life? So I don't necessarily, like, again, I hate it because he's not playing. But at the same time, the NFL is setting up a situation where players are looking more at themselves going, hey, wait a minute, hold on. I am George Pickens Incorporated. And
yeah,
nobody is helping me and no one is working this out for me.
Which I can get, but I mean, the play Tank Dell was injured on was he was pulled into...
Sure. They did completely, totally different things.
He wasn't stretched wide out and asked to block on the perimeter.
Right.
And
the Tank Dell excuse doesn't make any sense, but he's not bringing it up as saying this was an exact thing. He's not saying we had exact same situations and he got hurt. He's pointing out that he got hurt doing that. I could get hurt doing this.
Right.
And so that's what he's saying. And he's basically implying I am paid money to catch footballs. That's it. And if you want me to catch footballs, I'll catch footballs, but I'm not blocking for a guy, and I'm like, and now it makes you go, oh my God, like, this is one of the reasons people are questioning Mike Tomlin's legitimacy today. Is this message gone, or would he have done that with anybody? Would George Pickens have done that with any coach and any team in any situation?
Right.
Take him anywhere in the NFL, plant him in any environment with different leaders, with different culture, whatever it may be. Or is this a Mike Tomlin thing where Tomlin is so pro player and backing players all the time that he knows that the worst will happen to him is Tomlin may yell at him in an office and he's all right. He's like, fine, whatever, but don't you still want me catching footballs for you?
Because
your offense stinks and you need me.
And I think there's a point to that because there is a leniency with Tomlin where it's...
Yes.
He did it
with Antonio Brown.
Yeah, that's
bit,
exactly.
Too much.
That's what I was going to bring up was Antonio Brown. Remember, Antonio Brown recorded an entire locker room conversation.
Exactly. And same with Le'Veon Bell's nonsense when he held out. It was, you know, Tomlin has been very player friendly enough that you have to take his word for it when he says, well, I'll be talking to that guy.
Which has been good.
And then we go like, how did that go?
Right.
Like, did it go good?
The player friendliness of Tomlin has been good to a point, but it's almost like now he's like, you know, he's that parent that wants to be liked.
Right. That's the problem.
And hard to just say, you know what? No, but this is discipline. And this is what's going to shape you as a man getting older.
If you're looking for a coach, you cannot have a coach that is crazy disciplinarian, runs the whole ship like a Matt Rhule coming in from college and thinking that's how it is at Baylor. That's how it'll be here. That's not how it works. Right. We know that. But you also can't be so player friendly that they take advantage of that friendliness and that support in doing things like this. And then you have to find the happy medium. You have to find a coach that creates an environment where players will be disappointed in themselves if they let him down. And that's the guy you're looking for. You're looking for a guy that will create a culture where a guy says, you know what? I'd run through a wall for this guy. I know this guy has my back, but I will run through a wall for him. And if you've ever worked for somebody like that, where you've had a manager or owner or whatever, where you've gotten so much from them to a point where you say, there is nothing I wouldn't do for this guy. If this guy called me at 3 o'clock in the morning and asked to drive him 500 miles, I would do it. That's the thing with players. And that's where people are wondering, is Pickens just taking advantage of Tomlin's ability to support players all the time? And Pickens is an example of that.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
By the way, I don't know what it is with Mike Tomlin and wide receivers. Like, it was Antonio Brown. Mike Wallace was disgruntled. And now George Pickens looks like he wants to be with another team. I don't know what's happening. Why can't they just keep talented people?
I don't
understand how that works. Antonio Brown. Look, I think there is something to Antonio Brown and his getting his clock cleaned in that game against the Bengals.
I really do. I think there should be a deep dive into that.
I mean, he really went from just a regular good football player, part of the Killer Bees, to insane, crazy, and just on another level of antics.
Because even Le'Veon Bell, I mean, Steeler
fans fighting the business.
Steeler fans will be mad at Bell for, you know, holding out that season and then just kind of derailing anything that the Steelers had really going for it.
Right.
But, I mean, it was just business. Yeah, he didn't fly off the deep end. I mean, the most eccentric thing he did was he was living in Atlanta or something like that, then came to Pittsburgh and was working out at a YMCA.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that story. He spotted in the Y.
It's crazy. All right, what is the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day. Actually, I have two, Tony. One's really quick, and I need your help to help me make sense of it. Then the other one's probably a larger issue that, you know, kind of touches on what we were talking about earlier in this hour. But the first is the Harding Bisons.
Harding Bisons.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where they're from, but they won the D2 national title this season using the Flexbone offense. They beat the Colorado School of Mines.
Colorado School of Mines, yeah. It's
which
been very good.
It's a very funny college name.
Yes.
This season, though, Tony, they went undefeated. Let me point that out, right? This season, they rushed for 6,351 yards. Very good. Okay. They completed just 26 passes all season.
Okay.
That's the part I'm having trouble. It's like, you went undefeated, won the D2 national title, and you completed 26 passes all season.
Now we have to know more about their offense. Was it
a flexbone?
Flexbone. Okay, so that worked.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's old school.
I kind of have a hard time because I spent 5 seasons covering Air Force, and this is the kind of offense they ran. And they never threw the ball at all, and that's what they did.
It just
Navy
blows
used
my
to
it
do that
blows
too.
My mind that 26 passes, you know, they completed all season. That's a really astonishing number.
Didn't Georgia Tech do this for years under Paul Johnson? Didn't Georgia Tech run the
flexbone? I think
offense
so.
And didn't throw a lot. If it works, it works. Like if you've got the personnel at that level where it's not stoppable, it's the best way to run an offense.
Yeah, I mean, rushing for over 6,300 yards in one
season
is incredible.
If you could run the ball all the time and be successful, you would run the ball all the time and be successful. Because, again, that old cliche, if you throw the ball, 3 things can happen, 2 are bad. But if you run the ball, 1 thing could happen and that's bad, but everything else could be good.
Yeah.
You know? But you got to be stopped. But, yeah, 26 completions?
Completions.
How many attempts?
Did they give that statistic?
Because what if it's 26 completions out of 300 attempts to throw the football, and they realize the guy we have at quarterback is really good at running the flexbone offense, but he can't throw. Every time he throws, we can't throw. Yeah. So, all right. What's the second dumb of the day?
The second dumb of the day, Tony, is that we talked about it before. Today is National Signing Day.
Yes.
And I think that this story I'm about to share with you is going to be an all too familiar story. This story is going to keep happening over and over and over and over again. So, 5-star wide receiver and the nation's number one overall recruit from out of Hollywood, Florida, Jeremiah Smith, has a verbal agreement with Ohio State.
Okay.
And I keep seeing things all over the place that today during lunch he's going to sign his letter of intent to Ohio State.
Right.
But he himself even came out that he may flip to Miami or Florida due to, and this is in quotes, them throwing all types of money at me.
Okay.
And so it's not... I
know you're putting this in the dumb, but why would this be dumb when now this is just the new business of college?
No, it's in the dumb because, you know, it is the new business and there's no, you know, where it brings me back to is Jerry Maguire. Remember the scene with Kush's father?
Yeah,
and he goes, "My word is my bond. It's as strong as oak."
Right, right.
And that is a dead thing now.
It's a dead thing now. Yeah. I would start saying to kids, don't verbally commit to anywhere.
Right.
Just like, look, if you're...
I mean, Ohio State's all excited. They're getting the number one wide receiver, number one overall player, according to Rivals.
So the verbal commitment is... That's got to... Deion complained about the verbal commitment. He thinks that if you make a verbal commitment, you should stick by it. The problem is, Deion, it's called a verbal commitment for a reason, and a written commitment is something completely different.
Right.
Right? Like, verbal commitments you can get out of. You can just... there's nothing that binds you to a verbal commitment. That's in business. That's in anything. Like if you're in a contract situation and the other side says, just sign that and we'll put it in writing later, walk away from the table. Like if what you want, because they won't do it once you sign the piece of paper, right? You can't take their word for it. And so I would start advising kids, don't make verbal commitments. Don't do it. But here's the problem. And that is that we live in a world now where everybody wants attention. So how does a young man get attention on his decision to go play college ball without giving a verbal commitment? That's the problem. They want that taste of adoration. So they make a verbal commitment and then here it comes, an avalanche of people on social media excited about them coming. Right. They're getting students are telling them, "Hal, can't wait to see you play on Saturday." Girls are giving them attention, all that stuff. And they get a wave of it. And then the endorphins kick in and everything, the dopamine, whatever it is in the brain that kicks in and makes you feel good. And you want to capture it again because it's so awesome. And then it dies out a little bit. Then you have signing day and you're going to get it again. So if you tell one of these kids, keep your mouth shut. Don't say a thing. Don't post anything. Don't answer anybody's questions about it. Stick around till December. They're like, "What? I can't. All right, it'll be hard to do, but I'll try to." It's hard. They're doing it as a wave of getting attention without really making anything official. So, but this is what the business is now. Like I just said, I made the joke. I mean, kids are getting rich today. High school kids are getting rich today.
Yeah, and for Jeremiah Smith, I mean, God, I mean, it almost sounds like Florida or Miami are backing the Brinks trucks up to his house, is going, "Here you go. What else do you need?
Right now, exactly.
Come to our school."
This is what the big warning. This is what everyone said would happen. Mm-hmm. Everyone said, like, when they started announcing NIL, right? And basically, the history of the NIL is very, very simple. It's very simple. Once California kicked it off, it spread so quickly that the NCAA realized we got a problem. Why wait for state legislatures? We'll just make it universal.
Yeah. Well, because if California did it and was the only state that allowed it,
right,
and no one else did, California have the best football schools in the country.
So they rushed. Alabama rushed it through. Florida rushed it through. All these other states rushed it through to counter what California had done. And then the NCAA said, "Well, okay, but what if in Indiana, for example, Indiana says no, you can't. We are not allowing NIL in the state of Indiana." And they're looking at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame's like, "Help!" And the NCAA is like, okay, you know what? We're going to just make this rule. We don't even need state legislatures. We don't need it. We can just say it's accepted.
You think Notre Dame sat there at the table and went, wait, what, come again?
Yeah, right.
What'd you say? No.
So now you've got all this stuff, but the pundits said, you're going to see a whole other side to this business than you've ever seen. Now this is going to be out in the open, which was once hidden is now going to be out in the open. And so I've always made the argument to people, and I've done this with old timers, like, you know, my father-in-law, my uncles who are old school, where they keep, you know, saying, well, it's been always going on. It's been going on forever. Yes, that's true. But now it's legal. And that's an entirely different thing.
Yes.
It's an entirely different thing. When it's out in the open, it creates an entirely different concept. It's like marijuana, right? We now have all of these laws about marijuana where now you can buy it in certain states, you can use it in certain states. The state is now getting in on the game. Okay, gambling, same thing. Now all these states want gambling. But if you wanted to do it before all of the laws, you had to go into an underworld, right? Like you had to find the guy that sold the pot on college campus, and you had to go to a bookie and deal with people that could break your legs if you didn't pay them back. Now it's open, right? Now it's legal. Now it's a legal business. And that's an entirely different cultural mindset than when you say this is illegal, even though you're still doing it, it's against the rules. And now it's not against the rules. And so now you are getting players who are openly saying they're bringing a Brinks truck to my house and I think I'm going to play football at Florida. And no one can do anything about it. And that's just the way the business works. And it's sad in a way because there are ideals that we think this has been that this has been guided by that may not have always been guided by, but now it's open. It's free for all.